Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome to El Telejón's La Liga Weekly. It's Barcelona's turn to fall at the yellow brick wall. Just when you thought there were no new ways for Barca to embarrass themselves, they conceded two goals that Mr. Bean couldn't have dreamt up and lost despite having 152% of possession and putting 1 million crosses into the Cadiz penalty box. All of that defensive calamity overshadowed the long-awaited Braithwaite versus Negredo showdown. I've heard that Real Madrid are closely tracking Britta Sombalonga. Shock news, Dembele's done a hamstring. They were genuinely trying to sell that guy for £100 million recently. Barca's fourth defeat out of 10 leaves them 12 points behind Atleti with the same games played and own goals, just one off being Barca's top scorer. Now, Atleti would never waste fortunes on fickle players. Thomas Lemar scored for them this weekend, his first goal since April 2019. A sign that Kieran Trippier has really settled into La Liga is that he's starting contract talks and lo and behold is immediately linked with a move to Manchester United. Yes, Manchester United, who've been inadvertently boosting La Liga players' wages for decades. Unrelated, Sergio Ramos could be back for Real Madrid this weekend. Los Blancos beat Sevilla thanks to Bono, for whom it was not a beautiful day. And at that point, I will stop because I cringe when I hear commentators crowbarring in Bono, you two gags. To know is rich from me, given how this intro started. We'll have the best of the rest, including the blood-curdling assaults that saw Getafe reduced to 9 men. And we'll praise the best-performing manager in La Liga, Eduardo Caudet. Because I, for one, have long been saying that European clubs should go and sign up Eduardo Caudet. Anyway. welcome to our Patreons. In fact, let's be honest, we've already welcomed our Patreons in a little preamble. So, because we're recording this in vision on Zoom. And it means that we have to change out of our pyjamas before we start the recording. Paul is our latest Patreon. Thank you very much. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to all of you who've joined the regular podcast as well. Terry, La Liga rather gave up on us about halfway through Sunday afternoon, didn't it? And final two games didn't produce an awful lot. So a couple of goalless draws to finish off. We haven't had Eibar Valencia yet, but it's still got plenty to talk about. There were some good games earlier. And the obvious place to start is the shambles, isn't it, of Barcelona's performance against Cadiz. So we had a chat, quick look ahead to the La Liga weekend on Friday for the Patreons. And you wondered how Cadiz, well, you knew how they would approach the game. You wonder what the stats count would be. The possession count was something like 80-20, wasn't it, in Barca's favour. So we knew what was coming.
18% Cadiz, yeah, I think it was.
Extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we knew what was coming and we knew. So Barca must have known what was coming and they would have known the only way to really lose this game would be defensive calamities getting caught on the break, and lo and behold, in they walk.
Well, actually, they didn't even get caught on the break.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the goals. I mean, it's shambolic from Barcelona. I mean, they had 82% possession, and they only scored an own goal. And the Desma wasn't troubled on too many occasions. It was repetitive attacking play from Barcelona, which was a downfall. But you analyse the two goals. I go back to that Cadiz are a team that not going to have many attempts on goal because they don't get the attacking half much. And that's not being disrespectful. That's how they want to play. And they've got every right to do so. It's Cadiz against Barcelona. They're not going to go stupid and start attacking and taking them on. We've seen teams do that in the past. I can remember Huesca, the last time they were in the division, going 1-0 up at Barcelona and having about seven players in attack every time they got the ball forward and ended up losing 8-2. So Cadiz are well within their rights to play like they did. Now, the first goal is a series of mistakes where Cadiz have a little bit of possession on the left-hand side of the pitch, and three or four Barcelona players are not putting the work in to win the ball back. They're going through the motions. And eventually, Cadiz get a cheap corner because Serginho Dest makes a hash of a clearance and slices it out behind for the set piece. And then, so that's their mistakes that lead to, don't give a team like Cadiz cheap opportunities from set pieces, because I guarantee you Alvaro Severo will be telling his players, we're going to be solid at the back. We're not going to commit too many players in attack. But when we get set pieces, let's come alive. Now, and they know they're not going to get many because they're not going to be up that end of the pitch that often. So can you imagine how switched on they are when they get a corner against Barcelona? And they were, and Barcelona completely switched off. They allowed a near post header from Fali with a decent delivery, but he wins the near post header far too easily. Someone's got to be in front of him, and they're not. Griezmann was closest, but he was behind him. And Mingueza was, I felt a little bit sorry for him. He does slip, he goes down instinctively, he tries to stick a head on it and heads it back towards his own goal. Ter Stegen makes the save. Why was no one at the far post to challenge Alvaro Jimenez, who slams it home from inches out? So a consequence of all those mistakes, that not closing down quick enough, allowing a cheap corner, not defending the corner properly. It's not just about they didn't defend the corner properly. It goes back to don't give away corners. And the second goal, that's not a breakaway either.
No.
The second goal is Negredo goes on as a sub. You can see him run on and give instructions to his teammates that you lot stay back, I'm going to stay up front. Barcelona have a throw-in. He's the only player anywhere near any of the Barcelona players when Jordi Alba takes the throw-in. So Jordi Alba, one mistake, terrible throw. I mean, or Lenglet should control it, but he doesn't. But it's a terrible, sloppy throw. It's either got to be full into him or take the pace off of it. He doesn't. He throws it quite hard. It bounces in front of Lenglet. Lenglet's in 2 miles for him to let it run across his body. It almost looks like he's had a shout from Ter Stegen to leave it. So therefore, Negredo's got a chance. He's got something to close down on his own. And then Ter Stegen, I have no idea why he doesn't come out and catch it. Or the challenge was pitiful, to be perfectly honest. He tried to cut across it so that he didn't make any contact and get hurt by Negredo in a challenge.
Yeah.
And then the ball breaks free. De Jong, who wasn't thinking about defending at that stage because Barcelona had possession, does his best to get back, but he sells himself in a ridiculous fashion that he slides in, and by the time Negredo sorts his feet out, De Jong stands up and has given up. And Negredo then just rolls it into an empty net, totally unopposed. So it wasn't even a case of Barcelona defending poorly against attacking, you know, counter-attacks. These were just two ridiculous goals. They're the kind of mistakes Atletico don't make, ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Barcelona are doing it every game now.
And also,
Atletico goal, terrible mistake.
They're not, if they were playing brilliantly, even this, you know, even two calamitous bits of defending in the same game, if they were winning games
5-2.
Yeah, 4-5-2, etc. You could survive that, couldn't you? But they're not playing well either. I know they played well in midweek, but, you know, wisely, I asked you in midweek, should we be just slightly cautious about a big win against Ferencvaros in the Champions League? And you said yes, because they're not playing brilliant football, and so you are then vulnerable to a calamitous bit of defending.
Yeah, I think when I look at the players that I thought played well for Barcelona in the evening and the match, I think Serginho Dest was their best attacking player, and he was the right back. And Pedri in the second half when he came in as a sub. That was it. Nobody else had a good game.
Yeah.
Lenglet was satisfactory apart from the mistake, but the mistake overshadows that. So he has to go down as a player that doesn't do his job well. And when you have a performance like that with your best attacking player as your right back, and Busquets did all right, and you know, you're looking at Pedri coming on as a teenager who's your best player.
Yeah.
So they've got massive problems. It's an old tactic from teams that play Barcelona, and this goes back to when Pep first took over. When Pep, you know, when people started to understand that Barcelona were playing and how you had to try and defend against them. I've joked about in the past, it's a narrow back four, it's the wide midfield players tucking in and almost playing as fullbacks. You don't mind letting Barcelona play the ball out wide, because when they cross it, no one's going to head it in the goal. And you have big central defenders from Cadiz, whoever it is, that just thrive on, you know, out jumping. This occasion, Braithwaite, Messi, Griezmann, and heading the balls away. And Barcelona are not particularly good at crossing.
No.
Unless they get the fullbacks to the byline, their crossing is from deep, it's high, it's straightforward for centre-backs to keep heading the ball away, or the goalkeeper to come and collect.
Yeah, 30-odd crosses, I think they put into the box. Yeah. Yeah.
They were happy, Cadiz were happy to defend the set pieces, defend the crosses from wide, knowing full well that was what they've been working on. And it paid off.
Did you, slightly off the point, going to the Premier League, but I read an article on The Athletic this morning about Arsenal's number of crosses, 56 crosses they put into the box, and Spurs put 9 in, and Spurs won that game. And I think what happens, I get that clubs look at stats a lot these days. I think there is a real danger of your statistical-based approach to football leading you to putting the cart before the horse, that you start to value what you can measure rather than measure what you really value, if you see the distinction. You basically say, oh, it's easy to measure crosses. And you say, oh, well, we'll put lots of crosses in. And Arteta mentioned it in his press conference, apparently. He said, oh, well, we put lots of crosses in. But you lost. So, you know, if you know, crosses are good, if they're good crosses, but they're not an end in themselves, are they? But very much by definition, you know. And so it's sometimes putting a load of crosses in is a sign of a team that's run out of ideas.
Yeah, this goes back to when I was playing. I played for a team that we were, it was law. It was law that we get in so many crosses per game. They didn't have to be good.
Mm.
And it was law that we hit so many channel balls. We had the young players that weren't playing, the apprentices back then, ticking off channel balls. Fullbacks, ticking off crosses from wingers, but we didn't rely on quality.
Yeah,
we relied on pounding teams to death because we had 6-7 players that were over 6 foot tall.
Yeah,
so we had two wingers. At least one of the wingers would be a centre forward.
Yeah,
playing wide. So when it was coming in from across, so therefore, if you want to build your team around that, getting a sufficient number of crosses into the box, then get the players to, you know, play a Peter Crouch, play an Andy Carroll, play Andy Carroll on left wing. Play Peter Crouch up front, play another big guy in the middle, perhaps a smaller winger on the other side to try and get the quality in terms of crosses to hit the big fellow on the far post. I've got no problem with that whatsoever if teams want to do that. But if you're Arsenal and you've got Aubameyang and Lacazette, and if you're Barcelona and you've got Griezmann and Braithwaite, that's not the way to go. You've got to get, you know, quality crosses in. I'd rather have 10 quality crosses in a game rather than 30 and 50 of just hoisting the ball into the penalty area. Teams are not daft. They do their homework. They know that's going to be the case. They won't allow you to get in good positions to cross the ball. They'll be hoping you cross it from deep. And in Tottenham's case, it was Dyer and who else plays? Alderweireld were immense, impeccable. Yeah. They headed everything away. So that was, you know, if you're going to keep doing the same thing, expect the same result, good or bad.
Yeah.
And it's not Barcelona's strength to just keep getting to the fullbacks or anyone else into a position where they're probably 40 yards from goal and hitting diagonal crosses into the penalty area. That's straightforward for teams to defend against.
Let's talk about Atleti. They won 2-0 against Valladolid. Again, they're a bit slow to get going. It's probably fair, isn't it? And then Lamar got a goal, Terry, which we'd forgotten about, the prospect of that. And then, obviously, Llorente got the second. I was wondering, there aren't many of the La Liga superstars playing that well at the moment, are there? But Llorente is one of the top performers, isn't he, so far this season in the whole of La Liga.
Just makes such a difference, doesn't it? Mm. I mean, whether he's starting games or coming off the bench, it's been incredible. It's a freak, to be honest. I can't recollect this ever happening before. In the past, witnessed a player maybe being a centre half or being a centre forward, or a centre forward going back to centre half. I can't recollect someone being a holding midfield player and then suddenly being this sensational striker.
Yeah.
Now, whether he's starting up front or whether he's playing slightly wider or slightly deeper, but he's always having an impact in the attacking half of the pitch. And people at the long listeners over this podcast knew that I liked him when he was younger and he was on loan at Alaves and he played well there. And I've always had that frustration that he never got an opportunity at Real Madrid. But I never, ever thought he was playing in the wrong position. And clearly, you know, it's remarkable. I think Simeone fell on it by luck, although he claims he saw something in him that led him to believe he could play higher up the pitch. But I think it all goes back to the Liverpool game when he comes on and scores two goals. And then just then, I thought he was a player that was full of energy, that had decent pace. I didn't know he was as quick as what we're seeing now, with and without the ball. And I just thought it was a good time to come on in that game against a team that were tiring, that frustrated, and he found the space and he made the most of it. I didn't expect for 1 minute that he would go on and become, you know, an important player for Atletico Madrid. He's got to be. I know he's been involved with Spain, but when you see him play, I mean, he's a defender's nightmare. He closes you down quickly when you've got the ball. He runs in behind when he hasn't got the ball. He runs past team players when he's in possession of the ball. He's a good finisher. He's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, the physicality. We don't always talk about the physicality, but it's a massive factor with him, isn't it? I remember back when he was at Alaves, the talk of how his physique. It just is a fitness freak, as we used to say. An immense dedication to his physicality, and it's obvious, and it's borne fruit, isn't it?
Yeah, fitness freaks, and there's not many of us left, John. And it was him and Ibai Gomez, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Both on loan, and they were sharing an apartment, and they were just both seeing who could eat the healthiest, who could do the most weights, who could do the most running, and it paid off for Marcos Llorente, and he looks to be a fantastic professional. Hence another reason that I liked him. You know, I like to hear that players, particularly young players, as he was at the time, were trying to improve and trying to progress and doing everything they could to make themselves better. And you can see that. He's carried that on throughout. He's mentally been strong as well, because his career hasn't been easy. Mm. You know, he went out on loan at Alaves, did well, never got the opportunities at Real Madrid, was suffering at Atletico because there didn't appear to be room for him. And, you know, to keep ploughing away in the way that he does, I think must be tremendously satisfying for him that he's now suddenly at the age of mid-20s developed into a player that's become important for the first time in his career. And he made a dramatic transformation when he came on. I mean, he's great to have as a sub as well. I mean, that Simeone has got a great squad and he can rotate and freshen things up. But as I said, if you're a defender's worst nightmare and you come on particularly towards the latter stages of the game to you know, freshen things up, then he will have the impact that he had against a tiring Valladolid.
We picked Sevilla Real Madrid as one of the games of the weekend. Slightly disappointing, certainly from Sevilla's point of view. Obviously, Real Madrid fans will be perfectly satisfied with a 1-0 win. Bono, feel free to work any. The reason I apologise, by the way, we're recording slightly late because I spent about 20 minutes trying to think of U2 related puns that would work in the intro, and eventually I just gave up and I came to the conclusion that I actually don't like commentators doing the song word puns in their comment unless they actually work. It's the crowbar that I object to. Anyway, more importantly, Real Madrid beat Sevilla, who are one of the season's big disappointments, Terry, aren't they, Sevilla?
Yeah, I mean, going back to Bono, the goalkeeper has become a little bit of an issue lately, hasn't it? Vasilic hasn't been in great form. Bono has not been as good as he was at the back end of last season. And they even had a young goalkeeper playing against Chelsea in midweek because of a late pull-out from Vasilic. So Lopetegui still hasn't found what he's looking for. In goal. No, going back to Sevilla, they drive me mad. They really do. Lopetegui drives me mad. And I think there are times where I think he's getting away with he's loosening the reins on, and he's got a plan A and he sticks to that. God, he's stubborn, you know? And the biggest example I'm giving this, and I'm not massive on stats. I have a few stats I look at. I like to look at average player position. I like to look where the players have their touches. I'm not overly concerned about possession stats and passing and that. I like to look at the good passes, the ones that make a difference as opposed to 25-yard passes. And I looked at En-Nesyri when he came on. Now, this is a player that comes on straight swap for De Jong. It should have been with De Jong, not straight swap.
Yeah.
He came on at 63 minutes when they were 1-0 down. So they're chasing the game. And En-Nesyri, in 63 minutes, let's say we'd added on time, he gets 30 minutes. He touched it twice.
Yeah. So the centre forward. Yeah.
So I'm not moaning at En-Nesyri.
Yeah.
You would expect a team that are 1-0 down against Real Madrid that have aspirations of, let's be honest, they had aspirations of winning the league this year, Sevilla. Yeah. To when you're chasing a game, you expect that period of the game to be the team that are leading on the back foot, they're defending deeper. Real Madrid didn't have to do that. At no time. I mean, Sousa made a difference when he came on, but it ended up 4-5-1.
So
loads of wide and midfield players, but only the one striker and a failure from Sevilla to get the ball into the penalty area. It would drive me mad playing for Sevilla up front.
So this is the question then. So Mikel Arteta, would he have watched that game and thought they just need to cross that ball more? Is this the opposite of what we were saying about Arsenal and Barca?
Yeah, and I think with Sevilla as well, there's a reluctance to do it because there's not enough players in the box.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but they do have a proper centre forward, don't they? Or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Three. Yeah. Carlos Fernandez was on the bench. Didn't even come on. So he just kept putting in more midfielders, more attacking wide players, but only left the one striker up front. So there was a lack of courage there from Lopetegui in his, not his initial team selection. I get it. That's his plan A, you know, pretty much 4-3-3. But he has to find some way of being able to adapt to the circumstances and taking, you know, being a bit more, you know, taking a more bolder approach to try and get back into a game of football. He refuses to do that. And when you've got Navas wide on the right and Alex Vidal on the left, although he's not left-footed, but you get the fullbacks push forward. He was playing there as an emergency. You get the fullbacks pushing forward. The wide players like Ocampos and Munir, they should be in the box as well. We don't get too many goals from the midfield players of Sevilla. Rakitic might score a long-range effort now and then. Jordan, likewise. Fernando might score from a set piece, knockdown, stuff like that. But we're not going to see a midfield player from Sevilla keep breaking into the penalty area, keep backing up the play on the edge of the penalty box. So they rely on literally one player in the team to score a goal, whoever's playing centre forward. And sometimes you see Navas get wide and he looks up three times before he eventually has no choice but to cross the ball. The reason he's having to look up three times is because he's waiting for someone to aim at.
Yeah.
Because no one else gets in there. So Navas gets himself in a position where he'd love to cross it early and he looks up and there's only one player, if there's one player. Because at times, De Jong drops deep, gets the ball, chests it down, holds it up, knocks it back, goes wide. They look to cross it in the box and there's no one there.
Yeah.
So listen, Real Madrid were adequate in this game. They didn't make any mistakes. And they were adequate. They were out possessions 63 to 30% possession by Sevilla. So that's a lot for Real Madrid. Yeah. But they were quite happy. They contained Sevilla so comfortably. They've got a makeshift back four with Lucas Vazquez playing right back, Nacho playing at centre back, no Sergio Ramos, no Carvajal, no Odriozola. And they defended so comfortably, it was impressive from them. They were helped by the midfield players that are having to work hard, but then midfield players of Real Madrid are looking at the midfield players of Sevilla and thinking, well, you're not running past me. You're not getting in the box. So if you can stay that side of me, we'll stay goal side. And we'll be able to deal with that threat too. The only threat is having to come from Jesus Navas down the flanks. And they managed to contain that. And when he did come in the box, defend it rather easily. So and Real Madrid were adequate. They didn't make the mistake that Bono made. I mean, it was dreadful goalkeeping.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't look immediately. He didn't think that's an own goal. He thought Vinicius had scored. he'd missed the sitter, Vinicius.
Yeah, yeah.
It was going across the goal. He didn't get enough contact on it to send it goalwards. Bono should have been across Vinicius anyway, but he was waiting for the... Because if Vinicius gets a decent touch on it, Vinicius scores.
Because yeah, he can't save it. Yeah.
He can't save it. He's out of position. So dreadful goalkeeping. The one big mistake of the day, Sevilla. It probably had 0-0 written all over it, that game.
Yeah.
But apart from the mistake from the goalkeeper. So fantastic result for Real Madrid. Show good spirit. They were focused. And when they are focused, they're still more than a decent team.
Alan Partridge would now find another U2 related pun to squeeze in at that point. unforgettable fire. right, can we move on?
Jen, I can do this podcast with or without you.
See, this, I don't, yeah, this is it. It never ends when you start down the path, when you start pulling at the thread of puns. Right. Granada 3, Huesca 3. Oh,
let's game.
Yeah, so poor old Huesca, who draw...
No, not poor old Huesca.
Oh, right, go on then, go on. No sympathy. Yeah, Huesca. So long wait for this first win, you know, all those draws, and what they're 3-1 up with not a lot of time to play.
Two minutes. Yeah. 88, yeah.
Yeah.
And 3-1 up.
Yeah, and actually they could have conceded... a fourth, couldn't they, right at the...
Well, Jorge Molina hits the post with the last kick of the game.
Yeah.
You could see it coming a mile off. Right. They over-celebrated when they went 3-1 up with Okazaki in the 82nd minute.
Yeah, that was a weird goal as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kennedy was left in no man's land.
Yeah.
Rui Silva came out, made a mess, lack of communication, or Kennedy didn't hear him, little knockdown. And Okazaki with a lovely chip. And I like the way he put a bit of curl on it as well.
Yeah.
It's an easier technique. So slightly wrap your foot around it and get the chip and the curl and curl it in. And it was one of those where you watch it and you think, is it coming down? That was the only problem, wasn't it? Yeah. It went high and it come down and dropped in the goal to lead them, the Huesca, the 3-1 lead. I thought, yep, done. They've got their first win. But I'm not playing. Yeah, I'm not out on the pitch. I can sit in front of the telly and go, oh, they're going to win. But when you saw the reaction on the bench, there was high fives and... a team celebration, the subs were down from the stand, and I thought, oh, be careful. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you're in, it's a great position, and they just, they switched off. I mean, the important aspect of that was don't concede the second to give them any chance, you know, stay with it and keep it at 3-1, because you knew if Granada got their second goal, you just knew it was going to be an issue mentally for Huesca to hold on to the win. And they failed to do that. Could Michel have made a couple of substitutions to strengthen the defence, waste time?
Yeah.
He could have done that, could have broke the game up. He didn't get a chance between the two goals, I have to be honest, because it was 88, wasn't it, and 89. They didn't defend well. Javier Ontiveros gives away the most ridiculous of fouls to allow Herman Sanchez to get the equaliser. Dowie Machis is out on the right wing. He's up against two Huesca players. He's not going anywhere. The clock's running down. You're 3-2 up. You just conceded a header from across from out wide. Javi Ontiveros just... It's not a bad foul, but it's an impatient piece of defending that gives Granada another set piece, another chance to deliver the ball into the penalty box and to take advantage of the anxiety from the Huesca defenders. And when the ball's delivered in, it's a good delivery, and Herman Sanchez is unstoppable. Because you can tell from his mentality, he knows they need a result because they're slipping in La Liga. And he knows that Huesca are fragile in terms of having a panic attack, basically. Mm. And he just runs, and he met the ball with, you know, a fantastic connection. And they got the equaliser. I feel for Huesca, I do. It's 8 draws, 4 defeats in the 12 games they've had. It's not a bad record. They have Alaves at home next week. It's a winnable game, for sure, even though Alaves have gone 6 unbeaten now. But you just wonder how much of a crushing blow that is going to be for Huesca, being so close to picking up all 3 points. And their form was good. They played well. They deserved to be 3-1 up. And it was just it was a great watch, unless you're a Huesca fan. But you could see Granada when they got the 3-2 with Molina that they thought we've still got time. And ultimately, Huesca got away with a point in the end because Molina goes through. It's a decent attempt. It's not a glaring miss. Strikes the post. The final whistle goes. It could easily have been 4-3 to Granada. Great end to the game. Game of the weekend, that. It comfortably.
Yeah. Right. Let's take an ad break.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So welcome back to the Audio Boom podcast, listeners. We've got some, got a couple of games with a couple of weird red cards to talk about. But let's do Celta Vigo, shall we, Terry? So the Friday night game, Athletic 0, Celta 2. Celta on the charge, like going back in time with their goal scorers, isn't it? You got Mayo and Iago Aspas, familiar old names, and a new name to many people, Eduardo Caudet. A coach who's got experience, but he's been around, hasn't he? Because he's coached obviously in Argentina, but he's also had a go in Mexico, and he was in Brazil last as well. So good effort. Well, so far so good from Celta Vigo to have found him. And then his first instinct seems to have been to, as you say many times, actually, Terry, calm down.
Yeah, played the same team as last week. The team plays well. His three games, he's had three good performances. Sevilla, they were unlucky to be beaten. Two late goals, deflected goals. And then, you know, the second game, he got a win. And this week, he repeats the lineup from the team that won the week before. The players are playing in the right positions. I know a lot of people saying there's too many attacking players in there. There isn't. I mean, Tapia has got Bryce Mendes and Suarez alongside him in midfield. I still think it's a 4-3-3. We're being led to believe it's not, that it's, you know, loads of attacking players and they're playing this, you know, attacking brand of football. My opinion, I look at the average positions that the players play, it's 4-3-3. So Suarez has to work hard in midfield. Thankfully, finally, looks like he's going to find his position.
Yeah,
because we've seen him play wide and stuff like that, and wide in midfield, wide up front. But he looks like he can play that central midfield role in a three with someone like Tapia playing behind him. Bryce Mendes, I've always liked. I think he's a good player. He's been in and out of the team too much because of the change of managers. And then when you have Nolito, Aspas and Santimina up front, you've got a chance. Santimina is still relatively young. He has disappointed since he's been back at Celta. At Valencia, I liked him. And I think he can come good again. And I think he's showing that with Celta now. So it is straightforward. I mean, he's asking the players to do jobs they can do. They can play by instinct, which is always an advantage. They're not having to overthink it and worry about and be, you know, the head too, you know, full of instructions. And it's a simple process. And they have good players. Celta Vigo, Hugo Mayo is a fantastic fullback for Celta Vigo. And, you know, it's pleasing to see him score the goal. There looks a good spirit amongst the players now. They won that game, I wouldn't say comfortably, but they controlled the game in the way that they played and deserved the win. So fantastic for Celta, concerning, worrying, I guess, for Athletic Bilbao that they were beaten relatively comfortably in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Levante 3, Getafe 0. Boy, was that needed for Levante. So they took the lead in the fifth minute, and then they go back and show a red card to Chema, high boot that I can't remember who it caught, but it caught an opponent. And then, to be fair, Levante then dominated the game. So that was the crucial red card, wasn't it? But then there's another red card later on for Gené, who, as far as I could see, Terry, he basically just missed tackle, just got his tackle slightly wrong, ended up standing on top of the ball, and his foot went over the ball and then caught his opponent. I didn't even think it was a foul, let alone a red card.
No, I agree. I think it was Rochina who feigned the pain, the injury. And Gené, you can see clearly he stands on, he does go on top of the ball. And when they roll off, they slightly catch. I think it was Rochina.
He's trying to do a turn. He's trying to get hold of the ball, isn't he? And drag it.
Yeah, trying to drag it back.
Slips it, and it just slips over the top of the ball. But there are quite a few incidents now, and I think it's almost a VAR-related thing, where there's this race to be contacted upon, almost, isn't there, where two players are going for the ball. And if, say, you and I are going for the ball, if I can just get my foot in front of your foot, and then you make contact with me, I go down and claim a penalty, even though I've never had possession of the ball. So, because that was Genet's ball, wasn't it? And he just happened to make a barely even a mistake, just happened to catch his opponent as he turns.
There's no aggression in the challenge, was there?
No.
It wasn't like he was going through the ball and over the top of the ball and trying to inflict some damage on an opponent. And I must be honest, John, when I saw it, I thought, well, VAR's going to overrule that.
Yeah.
And nothing happened.
Yeah.
So that was tough on Getafe. Levante, desperate for the win. I mean, it's a surprise that they're down where they are. I'm pleased at the bottom, even though we talked about Huesca not getting a win yet. No one's cut off adrift, are they? Win, a couple of wins back to back can see you getting to mid table quite comfortably. It's that type of league at the moment, and there's still hope for Huesca. Getafe is slightly behind where they want to be, but for Levante, I'm pleased to see Dani Gomez and Jorge de Frutos score goals, two young players they invested on in the summer. Classic Levante signs. I think they're both from Real Madrid. Classic Levante signs, £1 million or so to bring in two young players. And, you know, they've found it hard to integrate into the starting 11. But that's the type of signings that Levante make, isn't it? They pick up the players that, you know, perhaps haven't cracked it at the bigger clubs. And Paco Lopez can, you know, hopefully find that they flourish under his management. And for them to get the two goals was a big lift. And for him to leave out Morales as well. I mean, it's quite a big call, isn't it? He's your go-to player. But when they're struggling to get wins, he made a big call to leave him on the bench, played the two young players, and it paid off. But to play with 10 men from the seventh minute.
Well, it's the fifth minute. It took that long to send him off.
Yeah.
When you look at the times,
that says it all.
Yeah. You look at the times on things now, but sometimes sort of a penalty and a red card, and there's sort of three minutes apart or something.
It's the same incident.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
So that's a long time to play with 10 men.
Yeah.
So Levante were possibly due a bit of luck, and they got it against Getafe, where perhaps their reputation goes before them now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People don't like them, do they?
And referees are keeping a lookout.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost the nobody likes us and we don't care thing, but you should care, probably. I mean, you shouldn't, you know, I'm not advocating changing the way you play to please your critics, but beware that people will come back and get and have a go at you if you develop a reputation.
Reputation, exactly. Yeah.
And also the other question with Bordalas, brilliant job, though, he has done, I mean, you know, amazingly well. Is there a point at which you think, He's had enough time there and he should probably go and do it somewhere else. Yeah.
From his point of view, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not saying definitely. I just wanted to make sure that you didn't think Getafe should give
no,
rid of
no,
him.
Yeah, yeah,
no, yeah, yeah. Yeah. From his point of view, I mean, every manager has, when you're manager of a mid-table club and that's the best job you've had and the best job you've done, surely there has to be an ambition to go and manage someone with bigger resources. And it's important that their manager makes that timing right. Because if Getafe do struggle for the rest of the season or don't do as well as they have done in recent seasons, then his stock won't be as high as it was when he was taking Getafe into Europe and then beating big clubs in Europe. So it is possibly something that he has to look at, and perhaps he might miss the opportunity.
Yeah, you've got to time the escape properly, haven't you? I know it's a bit cynical, and the legions of Getafe fans who listen to us will be sending in their angry letters again, Terry. Hello, Jorge. Betis are, as we're always saying, Terry, Betis are a rock solid team, aren't they? Good solid 2-0 away to Osasuna.
First clean sheet in 18 years. Pellegrini has finally realised what he walked into. Yeah. And do you know what? I know where our differences about his ability as a manager now at Betis. Perhaps he, at last the penny has dropped that he's going to have to do some work. Yeah. And I mean that in terms of, oh, we can see too many goals. We have the ability to concede 4 or 5 in a game. I need to start working on about. I can remember him at Malaga and Manchester City in particular, not so much at Villarreal. I can remember at Malaga and Manchester City having this rock solid back four with players that weren't particularly great.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he organised them well. They had a ruthless defensive line where they didn't drop in deep. They were well coached, well drilled. They caught players offside so easily. It was ridiculous. And he needs to make Betis function like that, because individually the defenders are not great. In midfield, they've been lacking help for a poor back four. So finally, he got Guido and Carvalho to sit and not go anywhere. And the back four, the focus was on keeping a clean sheet. They've got enough attacking players. You know, whichever team he picks, is in there is an abundance of attacking midfield, creative players, 3 centre forwards that can be decent. So that was, it was never going to be enough for him just to come in and go, oh, let's just carry on as we have been under Kike Setién and Ruby. No, he has to earn his money now, and he has to make sure that they are more solid, harder to beat. They played against an attack that lacked imagination, lacks creation at times, can be one-dimensional, so that helped him slightly. But it was a good win for Betis. Osasuna, despite Osasuna 5 without a win, so they're not in good form, but going there and playing against Osasuna is always a tough game. It was a tough game, but Betis were well deserved to take all 3 points.
So the slightly measly weekend in terms of goals, 9 of the 18 teams that have played so far have failed to score. And obviously a good week for the Madrid clubs, because the other two teams up there, Villarreal got a 0-0 with Elche, who are, despite all of our pre-season predictions, they are solid, aren't they? And they are, you know, proving to be difficult to play against, difficult to beat. And Real Sociedad found the same against Alaves, despite, shall we start here with that, the other weird red card?
Rodrigo Battaglia is clearly a ventriloquist. because when you see the replay on telly, he's looking directly at Pablo Machin. I think it's a throw, it was a breaking play, maybe a substitution about to take place. He's 10 yards from the touchline. Pablo Machin is communicating with him. He's communicating back, and the referee is 5 yards to his left.
Yeah.
And the referee sends him off.
Yeah.
So I can only assume that him and Pablo Machin were between them abusing the referee.
Yeah.
But he wasn't doing it, didn't appear he was doing it directly to the referee.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how that works. If you're talking about someone, is that enough now to get a red card? Because I hate seeing players directly in the face of the referee.
Yeah.
Hurling obscenities, red cards all day long. No problem with that.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see the report on how this plays out.
It's hard to know, isn't it, without...
Because Battaglia looked as if to say everyone was asking for an explanation.
Yeah.
So if a referee has the power now to send off a player if he doesn't like something he says to... I had it when I was a young player. I was a guy well off pace here. An absolute nutcase, great bloke, Terry Naylor at Tottenham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a reserve game, was abusing the referee to me by saying, Gibbo, don't listen to him. Don't take any notice. Don't even get under. He's this, he's that. And he was using all these obscenities, which I use on the podcast. And the referee looked and thought, well, I can't do anything. Because it's a private conversation between these two players. But clearly he was doing it, so the referee knew that exactly what he thought of him.
Passive-aggressive behaviour from Terry Naylor on the pitch. It's the second time Terry Naylor's got a mention on this podcast.
the referee was bemused. He was thinking, well, I can't send him off because he's not talking to me. I wondered whether that was something along the lines of Battaglia and Pablo Machin. The referee didn't like it. So that was a weird one. Alaves are unbeaten in 6, 4 draws, 2 wins. Hard to beat, which they've always been.
Yeah.
It was against the natural instincts of Pablo Machin. So hence the beginning of the season, they were a little bit of a mess, to be honest. They didn't have an identity, but they do now. And, you know, they're making a good fist of sort of marrying up the manager's ambitions and style of play with the players that he's got and sensible approach. And they've come to against Real Sociedad. Pacheco was good in goal. Real Sociedad having to make a number of changes now. David Silva injured in the warm-up because of the importance now of the game against Napoli as well.
Yeah.
That's their final, isn't it, in the Europa League. So they've taken their eye off the ball slightly in La Liga. Drew against Villarreal last week, drew in this game as well, which has allowed Atletico to go top of their league with two games in hand as well.
Yeah, you've gone a bit to Zidane there, Terry, describing games as a final. Everything's a final to Zidane, isn't it? Yeah. And then Villarreal 0, Elche 0.
Yep, three straight draws for Villarreal.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Villarreal, they're unlucky. Alcacer's coming back from injury on the bench, comes on, goes off injured again. They do miss him. They need him playing. They need their best, you know, strongest 11 playing in every game. I love Elche. I really do. I think they were the clear favourites to go down, weren't they? Because they came up in the playoffs.
Overwhelming in our poll, yeah.
Loads of players left the club. They brought loads of players in. They brought a new manager in. And I talk about an identity. I think, and this is even more remarkable, they look to me to be the fittest team in La Liga.
Mm.
Now, when you think they had the shortest break, I know not many of them are there still, that won the playoffs. But the amount of time he had to get a group of players together, when you see them attack, they attack in numbers.
Yeah.
When you see a team break on them, you watch the incredible effort they make to get bodies back. And suddenly, you know, Villarreal have a counter-attack. And before you know it, double the amount of Elche players are back in position. And you just think, God, how hard did they run and work to get back as quickly as they could to deny Villarreal a counter-attack? And it was great to watch. There was one attack, a couple of attacks in the second half, where it was real noticeable that, you know, they were still having to go to try and win the game. And when the ball was lost and Villarreal broke on them, the Elche players showed much more enthusiasm to get back than the Villarreal players to get forward. And that was not being critical of Villarreal. It was just the impressive attitude of the Elche players. Working hard together as a team, and, you know, they've got more than a good chance of staying in the division again.
I wonder whether Amorón has been able to get the sort of siege mentality going. I wonder whether that's it. Yeah. You know, it's quite hard sometimes, isn't it, to demand a really hard work rate of players to keep going back and back and back. But given the circumstances, given that, you know, that the pre-season poll that we did, that, you know, they were runaway bottom team. And obviously everyone everywhere is, you know, who's looking at it is saying that. And he would have thought that. Everything's new. You could say, listen, boys, this is a relegation battle. And almost channeling the new manager bounce that you sometimes get when you sack your manager and you bring Sam Allardyce in at the end of the season, and they all start working hard for a few weeks. That's they've been able to channel that for the whole season because of the remarkable circumstances that they're in.
And also he's given a lot of players, or the club have, opportunities to play in this league for the first time. So that's players that were at second division clubs, players that were playing mostly in South America that have come to Elche. So there's a cause there that they're fighting for, and they're willing to adhere to what he wants from his team. And, you know, they're good to watch. I mean, even Perry Mia, the striker, hasn't played much in the top division, so he's one of the few that survived. He's got calls, you know, so he's got that benefit. And I think they're good to watch. Deserved the draw. Villarreal, very few, you know, chances on goal. Keeper didn't have to make too many saves, Badia, but, you know, Elche, a good, solid performance, solid result, and they continue to do that week in, week out now.
Right, we should stop there, really, because people have got busy lives to be getting on with, haven't they? So we will be back for the Patreon. So it's patreon.com/LTEL. to join in, and then you get the extra stuff and you support the podcast basically as well. So it's those two things. We are very appreciative of everyone who has done that so far. If you want to buy a book, I'm flogging books, so that's it's
should be in the advert, John.
I should do my own advert. I can't afford to go on my own ad break. My name, and it's the 50 football's most influential players. And the people who've read it have been very nice about it so far, but loads of people I know have bought it and they've wrapped it up and stuck it under a tree. And I'm thinking, don't do that. Read it. Tell everyone about it. Anyway, so you know, buy my book. And if you've got anyone in the services, have a word with Terry. You'll get your account.
Any Navy mums, RAF, yeah. And Royal Air Force mums coming after Christmas as well.
So there we are. And we'll see. So we'll see everyone for another podcast next week, and we'll see the Patreons later in the week. Thank you very much, everybody.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.